This audio was recorded on the 2010 Feminist Walking Tour on International Women's Day in Dublin. This segment was recorded on Sean McDermott Street, and Mary McAuliffe of UCD Women's Studies talks about the Magdalen Laundries.
Second last stop, we're very privileged to have with us Dr. Mary McAuliffe of UCD Women's Studies. She also works with Justice for the Magdalens, an organisation seeking to promote and represent the interests of Magdalen women. So thanks very much.
Hi everybody, it's a great privilege to be here at this stop to talk about the Magdalen Laundries and Asylums and their very long history in Ireland. It's very pertinent today because, of course, the Magdalen women have been excluded from the residential redress legislation, which sees them as being part of private charitable institutions in which the women were deemed to have voluntarily committed themselves. And how they did that, I don't know, but apparently that's what happened. There are five different organisations, different religious organisations involved in this that the Justice for Magdalens would be talking to. They are the Good Shepherds, the Sisters of Mercy, the Sisters of Charity, and the Sisters of Our Lady of Charity of the Refuge. These are the religious congregations that were running the Magdalen Laundries for the last 150 years. However, the Magdalen Asylum system has a longer history in Ireland. The first Magdalen Laundry was set up in 1767 in Leeson Street by Lady Arabella Denny. It was not connected with a religious congregation at that time, and it's very much part of the 18th century philanthropic values of aristocratic women who were finding ways in which they could use their time, as they were not allowed to work, but they could use their time and energy rather than just working in the home, that they put that energy into educational schemes and charitable institutions. And we see that philanthropic history is very much part of the early stages of women moving out of the home and finding out that they could run institutions, that they could, you know, figure out how to run the finances of big organisations and run educational institutions. The first Magdalen Asylum was not particularly like the ones we understand today. It was about rescue. It was about rescuing young women who had, for example, been thrown out of service if they were in service in the big houses in Dublin. A lot of these young women would be country girls who had come up to Dublin, gone into service, and perhaps for some reason they may have been abused by the men of the house. They may have been thought to be too pretty by the lady of the house and therefore a threat to her. They would be dismissed without reference. And without a reference, they could get no other work. Therefore, a lot of them ended up on the streets, involved in prostitution and in danger of abuse and rape. And these Magdalen Asylums were there as rescue organisations for these women, but not just for these women. They were also there for women who were experiencing the real poverty that was part of an 18th century and early 19th century city. They were there for women who were suffering from domestic violence, who were in danger of being killed by their husbands, which was perfectly legal under the laws of the time. A man had a right to hit his wife to keep her in line, as long as he didn't kill her. So these organisations were there to provide refuge from this sort of experience for the women of Dublin and other cities throughout Ireland. However, this changed through the 19th century when the Catholic Church and the religious congregations began to take over the running of the Magdalen Asylums. And you have a change from rescue and refuge, where women could come and go into the asylums as they wished, to containment, control, regulation, and where women were strongly encouraged never to leave or actually physically prevented from leaving these institutions, and many women ended up spending their entire lives there. And it also changed from a rescue mission. What you had now was the state referring women they saw as danger to society, who were perceived as immoral or badly behaved, taking them off the streets and putting them into spaces and sites of containment, because, of course, their immoral behaviour was seen as a danger to the morality of the nation, not just their own morality, but that they were like a cancer. It would spread if you did not remove these women from society. And this continued into the early days of the new Irish state, the Irish Free State, and, of course, that's very much feature of a post-colonial state when it's trying to develop an identity of its own. And the identity of the new Irish Free State was very much bound up in a very Catholic identity as well, but very much a right-wing traditionalist identity under Catholicism. The idea that women needed to be contained and controlled. Women were put on a pedestal. They were the wives and the mothers. It's enshrined in our constitution. But if women who were not performing that role of morality and respectability fell away from that pedestal, they had to be regulated. They had to be contained and controlled. So therefore, women who were unmarried mothers, women who were raped, who suffered from incest, who were suffered from domestic violence, who were deemed to be a bit promiscuous or sexualized, and again, it was the state and the church who decided this, had to be removed from society because, of course, the stain of their sin would spread through society. Insights like this, these women were contained behind high walls where they spent most of their lives in silence, working for no money in the laundries, and this despite that our Minister for Education recently called them employees. These women did not go and work in these laundries by choice. They were not paid. They could not leave. I don't know of any employee who signs up to those sort of conditions in work. So therefore, they were not employees. They were prisoners, really, for want of a better word. And they were signed in there by their families, by usually the head of the family, their fathers, by a priest, by a doctor, usually a male doctor, by the state. The state referred women into these institutions. Oftentimes young girls who had been put into industrial schools or orphanages, instead of being released at 16 or 18 when they should have been, were just transferred into these institutions because, again, they were seen as extraneous to society. They were unwanted bodies. They were disposable. So they needed to be taken away. So they were assigned into these institutions where they spent their time in work. If they were unmarried mothers and gave birth, generally their children were taken away from them. And we do know now that a lot of these children were exported. They were taken to America where they were given to Irish Catholic families. And a lot of those grown-up children are now coming back looking for their birth mothers. And of course, the horrible thing about this is the records of these institutions, because they are private institutions, don't come under the Freedom of Information Act, so they are locked up. We cannot get at them. So it is impossible to get the actual records of what went on, and that's one of the demands of the Justice of Magdalens, that these records be opened up, that we know what happened to these women. We're now making a lot of educated guesses based on secondary sources, but to get at the records would really give us the story of what happened to these women, and I suppose a more of a impetus never to let that happen again. So Justice for Magdalens is about looking after these women, because if you think about it, the last laundry only closed in the mid-90s. So there are still women who are living in institutions because they had been institutionalised, they couldn't come out into the community, who still need to be looked after by the state, because it was the state who caused their institutionalisation. So Justice for Magdalens is looking for an apology from the state, from the religious congregations who ran these institutions. They're looking for something to make, or for, I suppose, finance, to make sure the women who are still left live out their life in comfort and, you know, whatever they need, health-wise, education-wise, etc. But also looking for an apology to say, yes, this was wrong. This should never have happened. The state and the church collaborated in imprisoning and criminalising women because of their bodies and their sexuality. And therefore, it has to be instituted in this state that that can never happen again. Thank you very much.
This audio was recorded and edited by Andrew Flood on the Feminist Walking Tour in Dublin. For more audio from the International Women's Day Walking Tours, go to http://anarchism.pageabode.com/cat/gender.